BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Good evening. The previous programme has been concentrating on political and military responses to the situation in Ukraine. But of course, for millions of Ukrainians, it's a family or an individual decision that they have to make. Do I stay and stick it out, or do I go to protect myself and those close to me? And for blind and partially sighted people, such decisions are complicated by having to cope with a change in circumstances with little or no vision. Well, a few weeks ago, we heard from Olga Mahler, who grew up and attended a blind school in Kharkiv, later moved to Australia, but has returned with her husband to offer help to visually impaired people coming over the border into Poland. Well, when we talked to her last, she spoke movingly about her own parents, both also blind, who weren't prepared to leave their home where everything was familiar, difficult as the current situation is for them.
It takes them 3 days to finally find a loaf of bread. The food is scarce. They live in the outskirts, and being blind, they don't have means of safely traveling further than the direct area around them. And it's not safe in terms of war and everything. At the moment, they are refusing to go. And I'd say that's how it will go in future, because they're saying we will just die here rather than suffer somewhere else.
Well, we got a lot of responses to that, and later on we'll hear more about what Olga's been doing to help people trying to cope as refugees and also catching up with how her parents are coping as well. But one couple who did decide that leaving Ukraine was the right thing to do for them was Denis and Olga Petrov. The Russians invaded on their daughter's 5th birthday, and Olga is expecting another baby in around 3 months' time. Well, about 10 days after the invasion, they moved out. I'm joined on the line by Denis and Olga. I want you both to tell me really about that decision. What were the considerations that you had to take into account when deciding whether to stay or go?
This decision for us was a bit different because for me, the main consideration was the safety of my child. But when the war started, it wasn't right away very clear how to go. And I realized the first day of the war, I realized that all my plans were not very practical because it turned out that on the roads there were enormous traffic jams and it was pretty dangerous to travel, and we had no idea how to travel with all our animals because we have quite a lot of pets, and we consider ourselves responsible for them.
I'm going to get you to come to that. I want to go to Denis, because you made that interesting point that you looked at it very differently. Can I ask you, Denis, what your attitude was? Because presumably as a blind man, you weren't going to fight.
Of course, I wouldn't be able to fight, but then on the other hand, could be maybe some work for me as a volunteer in various fields. But then on the other hand, as a blind person, I would be of a lot of trouble to other people who would like have to make sure that the food is delivered to me and so on and so forth. So I realized it was ridiculous to stay on the one hand, but on the other hand, I simply wanted to be there. It's like irrational. It's the place you have sentiments for and you do not want to leave, especially like when you are forced to.
Did you argue about it?
No, not really. Not maybe a little, but not much.
The considerations of safety, they were like quite clear, because like we couldn't reach medical care which was critical.
Yes, it was getting very scary, and we were not so much arguing, but I remember that there was one day when in fact Olga Mahler wrote to me and said there were some volunteers helping blind people to leave from Kharkov, and I started crying uncontrollably because I knew I wanted to go, but I was scared and I didn't know how. It was from Kharkiv, not from our place. And so I think it was the beginning of real action for us.
So how did you go in the end? I mean, how did you get to the border?
A relative of our former neighbor who was volunteering, he was driving back and forth to the border, and he picked us up with all the animals. And he brought us not to the border, but to Khmelnytsky. Then other people picked us up from there and took to Ternopil, another western city in Ukraine, and then were taken by some other transport to the border.
You better explain about these animals. Olga, how many animals are we talking about here?
We're talking about five cats and two middle-sized dogs.
Right. I mean, weren't you making things rather difficult for yourselves? They were difficult enough as it was, trying to take out five cats and two dogs.
Yes. So, in fact, I think one of also very important points for our departure was when a Polish pen pal told me about a Facebook group where Polish people tried to help Ukrainian pets and Ukrainian animals. So before that, I couldn't even think that somebody would, you know, allow us into their apartment or into their place with all these animals. And so we were rather thinking about maybe finding some temporary accommodation for them, maybe.
The plan was basically to leave them behind in Poland and probably travel to Italy.
But in the end, you did take them. I mean, can you explain what happened when you got to the border?
So when we got to the border, we already had connections in Poland with people who were ready to help us, and they picked us up from there. So from there, it went all very smoothly. And maybe it's important also to mention then that before we left, Denis wrote a post to this Facebook group, and he got unbelievable response from the Polish people. It was like really, really huge and touching, and many people offered help. But finally, a woman offered us to stay in an apartment she had. We live there alone without without anyone else and with our pets.
The whole business of leaving like this, what did you leave behind?
Everything.
Yeah, since we were taking the animals, we couldn't take much more. So, like, it was one suitcase with just a little bit of very basic clothes, speaking a thermometer, you know, and everything we had to leave, like our house or whatever there was in the house.
All our possessions, yes. And like as our new Polish friends joke, we start a new life with one suitcase and five cats.
Can I ask about work? I mean, Denis, do you work and what do you do?
A very complicated question. Yeah, I used to be a freelancer and I was working mainly for one platform. And since they went sour just before the war, so I was like starting to look for a new job when it all happened, and now I continue to do it in Poland, but so far not too much success, which is like very unfortunate because like we cannot stay here for free forever. There are many refugees here, so like the jobs are really hard to find, but for somebody with the disability, it's like you multiply it, you know.
And I guess the other factor, Olga, is that you're pregnant. There's a new baby on the way as well.
Exactly, yes. So that's also financially a strain, even in the best circumstances, right? So it's not very easy. And I know that I won't be able to work for a month at least, because what I do is teaching online, teaching languages online. And I lost most of my students because of this situation, because most of them were either from Ukraine or from Russia. And you cannot get payments from Russia anymore. And so I dropped those students as well. And as the baby arrives, I understand that I will have to make a break in my work anyway. So
now, only a few days ago, there were signs that some people were gradually moving back to Ukraine. Now, since then, of course, attacks have become more frequent again and more widespread. What's your own view?
The process has not stopped. I mean, yes, the attacks are more severe, but people are still going back. Like one of our neighbors we heard from today, she returned. And Kyiv, it's as it is, it is more or less safe. It's just the only thing, there are too many mines around. Right.
And Olga, what about you, given what you said about your reasons for leaving in the first place?
I think about it a lot, and it's very complicated, so really I don't have a clear picture in mind, and I try not to think about the future, because I don't know where I want to be anymore, and I don't know what my life will be like anymore. I can't imagine it here. I can't imagine it there either. So I'm concentrating on having the baby in July, and that's the main thing I'm going to do right now. The rest will come later, I guess.
Well, Olga and Denis Petrov, we can only wish you the very best of luck, particularly good luck with the baby, Olga, and thank you both for talking to us. Well, Olga Mahler, who we heard briefly from earlier, has been in Poland for the past several weeks, helping those coming over the border. Well, she's been bringing me up to date with what she's been up to.
So since we talked last, the flow of refugees trying to find home in another country actually slowed down. A lot of people have found their temporary home, whether it was in Poland or Sweden, and we were actually starting to look for another project, but we didn't have to wait too long. Back in high school, I went to America as an exchange student, and the family, host sister, was also blind, and her name is Laurel Wheeler. Laurel has started a charity, Laurel Wheeler Foundation, that provides blind people in Eastern Europe with assistive technology. It could be braille displays, laptops, phones, even canes or braille papers, anything really. We've been able to purchase 50 secondhand laptops in a wonderful condition. We also purchased around 20 smartphones, and Laurel actually visited personally us in Warsaw, and she brought with her some secondhand braille displays, magnifiers, a lot of canes. So we've been running like crazy, distributing all the stuff to blind people, but it made a really, really big difference.
Is this really for blind people who've come out of Ukraine but have come in a hurry, haven't been able to bring their stuff?
Absolutely. So I am not exactly sure why the reason is, but most Ukrainians have desktops. So a laptop here was really a saving tool for them, because a lot of them continue online work, online schooling at university, at actual, you know, high school. And without a laptop, it was not really possible. People were telling me horrible stories how they were trying to submit assignments, typing them on their smartphone, you know, so it was life-changing.
So it sounds as if quite a lot of blind and partially sighted people have come out of Ukraine. Do you have any idea how many?
Oh, that would be hundreds. But we were able also to help blind Ukrainians who were misplaced and moved from eastern Ukraine to western part of Ukraine. In fact, my husband, regardless of my plea not to, made a trip from Poland to Ukraine to deliver some very valuable equipment. Laurel's Foundation has purchased for Ukrainian blind journalist a braille printer. And not only that, my husband also was able to send two large parcels to my parents in Kharkiv who are still there. It's a bit of a miracle on its own, their story, in terms of us being able to help them at least with some food and clothes, because you're actually not able to send from Poland to their address in Ukraine, because all the parcels that arrive by the only courier who is able to deliver parcels to the area where they live, everything that arrives is considered as humanitarian aid. Nothing gets delivered to any particular address. So just on a few hours' notice, we were able to send my parents a large barrel of cheese and huge salami. And when my mother received that, she said, "I forgot what salami even smells like." what butter tastes like. Because, you know, so only foods that they were able to get was humanitarian aid from the West.
Are they still determined to stay in Ukraine?
They are determined to stay in Ukraine. They said we would rather die here. And they are even joking about it. They said, well, look, now you've sent us new underwear and socks. We would not be embarrassed to get buried in it.
Just one more question, Olga. How many people have come over the border and how many blind people? How are they finding places to live?
That is one of the most difficult questions and something that blind people need help with. So as an example, we developed close relationship with one particular group. I have very soft spot for little children, especially if they're visually impaired. And so we found one group here not far from Warsaw in Lasky, in the blind school. There is a group of Ukrainian visually impaired and blind children, different ages, with their mothers. And they are staying there and attending classes at that blind school. But they are living in a sort of like, I would call it a school hotel. And we were told that, unfortunately, after the school year finishes, they are not able to stay there anymore, even though the conflict obviously is not going to end in a hurry and the children will need to continue attending the school. So they're happy to continue providing education, but they are not able to continue providing accommodation. Basically, the Polish government, they have provided financial assistance to hosting families for every refugee, but only for 2 months. And the government, of course, can't afford it, but also they're trying to motivate you to get a job. But if you are visually impaired, if you're blind, it's not that easy. I fear that, you know, soon the war in Ukraine will disappear from headlines. People will forget about it, but the problem will remain and people will need just as much help in few months as they are now or as they were a month ago. So my husband and I are planning to come back at the end of November, but it's just two of us, right? I don't underestimate, you know, the amount of help that one or two people can provide. We're all just pieces in the puzzle, you know, we all play a role. But I just hope that there will be more significant help provided to those people in need. I really hope so.
Olga Mahler, and we'll certainly be trying to keep in touch, both with Olga and the Petrovs. And that's it for today. We welcome your emails, of course, in touch at bbc.co.uk. You can leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338, or you can go to our website, bbc.co.uk/in touch, from where you can download tonight's and past editions of the programme. From me, Peter White, producer Beth Hemmings, and studio managers Mike Smith and Mark Ward, goodbye.